Salam sejahtera, anda bersama saya Cynthia Ng dalam Agenda Awani. Sektor minyak dan gas adalah antara sektor yang paling utama dalam ekonomi Malaysia dan dalam pada episod kali ini kita akan membincangkan peranan Petronas dalam memacu sektor ini dan juga kita akan melihat apakah outlook untuk tahun 2023 dan juga cabaran yang perlu didepani. Jadi dalam episod ini saya akan teruskan diskusi dalam bahasa Inggeris. I would like to welcome the Executive Vice President and CEO of Upstream Petronas, Dato' Adif Zulkifli. Thank you so much for making time to be here at Astro Awani.
Thank you so much, Astro, and also Cynthia, for having me over at the studio.
Well, it's great to have you here, Dato', especially now on the way towards the end of the year. Before I start about, you know, talking about outlooks for 2023, I just want to get your thoughts about what has happened over the last 2.5 years. Are things back to normal for you?
Things are, but you know, a lot of things has happened over the last 2.5 years. You know, we went through a period of a COVID pandemic in 2020 to 2021. And now today we find ourselves in a period of high oil prices. Mm-hmm. This has been a very exciting journey for most of us. But maybe let me talk a bit more during the period of COVID, the 2020 to 2021 period. And I would categorize that as it was unprecedented. It was indeed the most challenging period for, you know, not just an oil company like Petronas, but for most nation. I mean, the whole nation went through a very challenging period during that time. But for the industry in itself, it was a very, very difficult period that we had to go through. You know, not only the pandemic caused a lot of issues with regard to public health and safety, but most importantly, operationally for us too, as a business, we were faced with the issue of twin shocks, what we call it. We have a situation where we had oversupply.
Yep.
And then as the pandemic took stage across the whole world economy, more and more countries went into lockdown. Mm-hmm. And when they went into lockdown, economic activities stopped. And when that stopped, that reduced the demand for oil and gas. And what we call the term of demand destruction. When you have oversupply, you have very low demand, it created a situation where the oil price went very low.
And I understand the upstream activities were severely affected because of the shock to the lack of demand.
Exactly.
As a leader of such a large company, one of the leaders, what key lessons did you pick up over the last 2.5 years that you think could improve the resilience of Petronas in the coming years?
Well, I would put that from the point of view of health and safety of our people. I mean, what one should learn from the pandemic during COVID-19 years, there are people who out there, you know, our frontliners ourselves, for example. Regardless whether the oil price is low or not, we have customers that we have to meet. We have got to continue to go out and produce oil and gas. Especially in the context of Malaysia, I think we supply quite a significant amount of gas to our power sector. And power sector is very much needed to make sure that we have electricity for me and you to work at home virtually. But there were people, I mean, easily at any one time, we've got about 2,000 staff working offshore. And we want to make sure that, you know, that they do their work safely, their health are, you know, being taken care of, so that not only that we ensure minimum disruption of our operation, so that the whole economic activities that is needed from this source of energy continues. But for the people who were frontliners, just like, you know, you will see the police, the KKM staff and so on, the offshore workers actually had to go through some hardship too. They had to go to, for example, you know, when you go offshore, you got to go through a phase of 2 weeks quarantine to make sure that everybody's clean before you go offshore, because you cannot have a cluster offshore. When they are all confined in a very small space in an offshore facilities, if you have a case, it's just going to go really,
and
really bad. It's going to affect operations. So we had to take great care of that. From 2 weeks going in before you go to offshore facilities, you got to spend, from instead of 14 days, 28 days. When you come out, you got to quarantine for another 14 days before you actually see your family. Mm. Total 2 months they were away from home, from your loved ones. And I would categorize that's one thing that I learned, and I must pay tribute to these workers who actually sacrificed for the company and also for this nation, in ensuring that the energy supply continues.
I think that was probably one of the toughest time for everyone.
Yes, it is.
And empathy goes a long way in that. Yeah. So we are now at this point, end of 2022, where if you're looking at oil prices, it reached all-time high in middle of the year. And now we're back to about hovering about $80 a barrel. There are concerns that a recession would slash demand again for next year. How are you feeling about next year?
Well, I mean, as you know, I mean, as we came out of pandemic, you know, more and more economic activities came back to normal. And then coupled with the fact that you now have an energy crisis in the UK, in Europe, brought upon by the conflict, we find ourselves in a situation that due to a bit of underinvestment, when we cut back activities, now we have to quickly ramp up activities to produce the oil that, and gas that is much needed by our consumers and our customers. And with that, I think we are also being challenged by a period of high inflation now. Mm-hmm. There's a tightening of the supply chain, and a lot of our input material has gone up. You know, for example, I think Petronas procure quite a number of drilling rigs to continue to drill and produce the oil. And easily, today, rig has gone up by as much as 200% in terms of rates. And then not counting, you know, steel, not counting oil and gas equipment. And that is causing quite a bit of a crunch in terms of our supply chain, and has also caused a lot of cost escalation. Mm-hmm. So therefore, a lot of activities that we want to do now is a lot costlier than it was before, and we've got to be very careful about that.
Okay. But on the upstream side, are you still ramping up activities
to cater to higher demand? Yes, we are. Today, Petronas produces about 2.5 million barrels of oil equivalent per day as a company worldwide. We have plans to ramp up to 2.7. And we are going to ramp it up on the basis that we have to fight with natural decline of about 10 to 15% year on year. Because oil and gas is a finite resources. The more you produce, the lesser there will be. So you need to continue to find new resources and new reserve to replenish. So the challenge is quite high for us in that sense. But we are trying to maximize in terms of our production capacity. We're going to make sure that we focus on operational efficiency. We're going to make sure all our plants are running as what they are expected to. We need to minimize downtime. And with that, we hope we can actually sustain our production level. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, we are also building new capacity. So we are actively embarking on more exploration program. We are actively embarking on new projects development. And we have already sanctioned a slate of projects that we are going to bring online over the next 4 to 5 years that will build up our production capacity from 2.4 to 2.7 million barrels of oil equivalent. And that's part of us capitalizing on the high oil prices,
okay.
So despite the challenges of the cost.
Okay, yeah. So overall, Petronas is feeling positive about fuel demand next year, despite the concerns, lingering concerns about recession.
Yes, we are. And we believe, the oil market tends to be volatile. Mm-hmm. But we believe there's still a healthy demand going forward.
Okay.
And we believe that at the moment, there will be some caution for recession here and there. Mm-hmm. But when we make investments, we don't make investment on the short term. We have to make investment on the long term.
Yeah, and that's what I want to talk about. You know, what are the challenges tied to the investment horizon for upstream, given all this volatility that we are still seeing? How does that affect capital allocation?
Yes. Essentially, when you make an investment decision in an upstream sector, you need to have a view of a 20-year oil price forecast. What typically we see at most is 1 plus 4 years. We don't know what's beyond that. So typically, we have got to be a lot more conservative in terms of our oil price projection. And that also to cater some of the volatility that we see between cycles. And we have got to make that decision whether a certain project will meet our expected return or not. And at the end of the day, capital will be allocated to projects that give you better returns. Essentially, that's what it is.
So what is the sweet spot for Petronas going to 2023 in terms of price?
We believe prices should be hovering around the mid-70s next year. Mm-hmm. But long-term, typically we are quite conservative. We are only sanctioning projects around $60 per barrel.
Okay, all right. Okay, so you talk about outlook long term. So I do want to talk a bit about energy transition, because this is every national oil company in the world is looking at energy transition very seriously, investing in renewables and clean energy. Talk to us about where does Petronas aim to be and how far are you along those goals in terms of energy transition?
Well, I mean, Petronas, as any responsible company, we fully subscribe to the fact that there will be an energy transition. in that sense that, you know, there are issues with regard to the climate events. There is some, we need to be part of a contributing to the society when it comes to climate change actions. And one of the things that we can do is certainly to reduce our emission. Mm-hmm. And that's part of our energy transition. We will continue to remain an oil and gas player. We continue to produce oil and gas. But we need to do in a manner that the oil and gas will be produced with the least amount of emission. It's not so much about the oil and gas. It's the issue is about emission. So I think we have a very active program what in anticipation of a low carbon future mm-hmm. to decarbonize our operations. So essentially, that's why it is.
2050 is the time frame, net zero carbon emissions target yes. by 2050. How are you going to get there? What are okay. the opportunities and what are the challenges?
Okay. A very interesting subject. I mean, I'm very, you know, we talk about this all the time within Petronas in the industry. The 2050 net zero carbon emission offers a lot of challenges, but also definitely offers a lot of opportunity. There are two pathways that we see this. Number one, our traditional line of business, the oil and gas business, would have got to decarbonize. We got to be ready for a low carbon future. And in that sense, that it challenged us to develop new resources, new projects in the least amount of emission. So we have got to deploy technology, for example. And one of them is maybe a bit more electrification in our operations to reduce mm-hmm. combustion. We have got to commit to zero venting and zero flaring. And these are the ones that you actually, if you see typical oil and gas fields, you see a lot of light and a lot of flare. And we have got to operate in that environment going forward. That's one part of it. And of course, there are solutions about carbon capture and storage, which we can talk a bit more a bit later. But on the second pathway is we are also ramping up our investment in renewables, in clean energy solutions. So we, in fact, we have formed a company called Gentari, an independent entity, mm-hmm. that will spearhead Petronas' efforts in cleaner energy solutions. And with three core pillars, they are mandated to look at building more renewable business. They are mandated to develop hydrogen as a source of fuel, and also to look into electric mobility. So there's two parts to that. The traditional business, we have got to quickly decarbonize while building a new set of business that engages in cleaner energy solutions.
All right. Yeah. I want to talk about decarbonizing and how quickly is Petronas doing that? What is your target?
It's we have got a very aggressive target, actually. 2050, it may sound about 30 years from now, but it's not too long. And at that point of time, we are committed to net zero. That means there's no more emission from all our operation. At the same time, we have also committed 25% reduction in our total carbon greenhouse gas emission by 2030. So we have set out on that pathway. That pathway number one, as I mentioned, all our plants, all our facilities have got to reduce in terms of emission. First thing what you need to do is to reduce combustion and you need to be more energy efficient. The more energy efficient you are, the less you emit. That's number one. Number two, I think there are facilities that continue to vent and flare. We have got to eliminate that by 2030.
Do you think we have the technology to do so
we
by
do.
Then?
I believe so, we do. And one of the game-changing technology that I am trying to promote actively is the carbon capture and storage.
All right. Talk about that carbon capture and storage is really interesting. I've had a discussion like I think 5 years ago. We talked about it briefly earlier before the show, and back then 5 years ago there was so much talk, but there was just not enough incentives to do so. And I think perhaps technology wasn't right at that time. Talk to us about the carbon capture and storage and what is the potential at this point in time.
Okay, carbon capture storage simply means when you have an industrial facilities, whether it's an oil and gas facilities, whether it's a power plant, whether you're a cement factory. The challenge is if can you capture the carbon that you emit, you need to just not only capture, but you need to transport it to a site, a storage site. Typically in the context of Malaysia, we have ready sites offshore Malaysia. These are the depleted gas fields. It's interesting, you know, we will spend the life as a gas field, we produce it. Once we have fully depleted the gas field, that container itself, you know, provides you the opportunity to store carbon in. And that's what CCS is about, carbon capture and storage.
So capturing the carbon at the source, at the emission source, transporting it, and then just pump it down a hole, essentially.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, talk to us about Petronas. What is Petronas doing about CCS? And talk to us about, I believe, the project in offshore Sarawak is one of the largest CCS so far to date for Petronas.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that.
Okay. Yeah, CCS is a known technology. I mean, it has been, been deployed for the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. But I think it has gaining a lot more acceptance now as the only solution that provides you negative carbon. Solution in that sense that you take carbon out and you actually store it and put it away from the atmosphere. For us, I think we have launched our first major project, maiden project actually, what we call Kasawari Phase 2. We are developing a gas field that has got high CO2 content. And this field is to provide gas supply to our energy plant and also to the domestic market in Bintulu. Whereas we produce the gas, CO2 comes out. And we cannot anymore let the CO2 just be released into atmosphere. Therefore, we need to capture it. We need to store it back into the underground. That's what essentially it is, Kasawari Phase 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
And can you talk to us about why the science behind it? So there are concerns about, okay, what's going to happen to the carbon dioxide that's been stored underground? And what's next? Is it just stays there? And is it safe?
Yeah. It's exactly that. I mean, you need to put it in a storage that where the geology around it is quite stable and safe. Mm-hmm. To put it simply, for example, when we first discovered a gas field, it is in a nice container underground, for example. It has got its traps, it has got its storage, and then it's completely sealed for millions of years before you discovered it. It will spend its life over the next 20, 30 years as we extract the gas out. But the container remains the same. So when you reverse the process of injecting something back in and you completely seal after that, in theory, it should be safe. It should be safe for 1,000 years. It should be safe for 1,000,000 years. But of course, that not only we cannot take that for granted. We have got to put a very active monitoring program to make sure that whatever that we do, there will be no leakages at all. Mm-hmm. And that technology is proven and has been already been deployed in North America, in Europe. There are a couple already storage sites in existence today.
But Kasawari is the very first project by Petronas.
Yes.
And in Malaysia.
In Malaysia, yes.
What's next? Are there going to be more CCS
There will be
built?
More. There will be more. We believe Malaysia itself, because we have been a big gas producer, once this gas field has spent its life as a gas field, it can be converted into CO2 storage. And we have got vast amount of potential for this. And our ambition is to turn Malaysia into a CCS hub for Southeast Asia, in fact, for Asia Pacific. And then, and given that, we believe there will be a slate of new projects that we would like to launch. Kasawari being first, there will be another one called Lang Lebah that will follow suit, also high CO2 field. And we are also developing two or three, what do you call this, old gas fields that have already been fully depleted. For us to convert them into a storage.
All right. Does it mean that building more pipelines so that the production site could be, you can transfer the carbon dioxide from the production site straight to the containers?
Part of it.
Okay.
But the good thing about CCS, we use the existing oil and gas infrastructure that already in place. Mm-hmm. Some of the pipeline can be repurposed. Probably need to install a new pipeline. But don't forget, some of the CCS or some of the carbon can be transported by ship.
Okay.
So we have got to develop what we call this liquefied CO2 ship to transport.
Do we have that right now?
We do have, but in smaller scale. Because, for example, in F&B business, you do transport CO2 for all your soda, mm-hmm. And for your beverages and so on. They do have that, but we just need to scale it up.
All right, okay. And speaking of making Malaysia the hub for our CCS, what makes an attractive hub for the CCS and CCS technology, aside from our geographical location and suitability?
Well, again, now we have a vast number of old gas fields that we can convert into storage. Mm-hmm. That's number one. They are mostly in South China Sea, which is the most geologically stable mm-hmm. in this part of the world. And we have ready existing infrastructure that is from the current oil and gas infrastructure that we have. We have terminals, we have pipelines, we got offshore facilities that we can convert them back into, for repurpose them for CO2. And again, in terms of the capacity, organizational capacity to do this, like in the upstream business, we have a host of competency that we can repurpose for storage space. We've got geologists, we got petroleum engineers that we can actually utilize. We got drillers that can actually, we repurpose to do this CCS business, and we believe that provides the necessary ingredients for a very thriving CCS industry in Malaysia for the future.
All right. Now, I do want to get your thoughts about CCS, the debate surrounding CCS. Some people or scientists say, CCS is a necessary tool to reduce carbon emissions if we are going to continue producing oil and gas. But others say it's simply perpetuating the burning of fossil fuels rather than switching entirely to renewable sources of energy. So where do you stand in that debate?
Well, I suppose the most important thing is people need to be certain, or rather be convinced, of what will be the energy mix of the future. Is the world going to be 100% renewable? Is the world going to be 100% nuclear? Or there is still a space for oil and gas? I believe there will be a space for oil and gas. On any amount, on any account of any projection that you see, by 2050, 40 to 50% of world energy consumption will still come from oil and gas. If you continue to produce oil and gas, and if you want to continue to produce oil and gas in a more responsible manner, then you have got to deploy technologies like reducing emission, and to the extent CCS, where you actually remove emission and store it underground for permanency. I believe that has got to start from that point. You cannot simply switch into renewable overnight. And that's the reason why we have energy crisis in places like Europe today. And it has got to be a gradual, progressive pace towards a carbon-free world one day.
Now, you brought up the energy crisis in Europe. I do want to get your thoughts. Do you feel that the transition to green energy is still on track, looking at the energy crisis? And many countries are now considering returning to coal in view of sanctions against Russia.
So the debate in Europe not has so much about energy transition now. It's about energy security. So they were quite dependent on the Russian gas. Now, given the conflict, I think they have got now to consider other alternative sources of energy. At the moment, I think they are importing quite a bit of gas from the US, North America. They're importing quite a bit from North Africa. And on a short-term basis, they are now restarting up their coal plant. But there must be a solution over the medium term and the longer term. They are, of course, doubling up their efforts in building more renewable capacity, wind sources, solar. But again, wind and solar cannot be the baseload capacity. You still need either nuclear or gas
because
to provide that.
At the end of the day, you need the reliability and also affordability, and renewables simply at this point cannot provide that to the masses.
All right. Yes.
We talked about energy security. You point that out. And I do want to ask you about Malaysia's energy security. Are we in a good place? And also looking at our energy transition mix, and Malaysia also has its target. The NEP, I believe, is to be in the next 20 years, so to decarbonize in the next 20 years. So can you talk to us about that? How secure Malaysia is in terms of
Malaysia, too, has as part of the nations of the world, has also committed to a carbon neutrality by the year 2050. What that means is that Malaysia, too, has got some commitment to reduce emission. And in that sense, I think the Malaysian National New Energy Policy states that it wants to reduce consumption of coal. It wants to increase more renewable. But having said that, oil and gas mix remains the same. It still hovers around 70% in that. And this is where Petronas come into play. We are a large gas producer. 70% of our portfolio is gas. We have gas not from offshore Malaysia. We also have gas coming in from our international operations. In that sense, we can provide some sort of security for Malaysia if gas will be the mainstay of our energy mix going forward in the future. And at the same time, a company like Petronas, TNB, we are also investing more into renewables. From that sense, I think there will be some responsibility to provide that security to the country.
Will renewables take over oil and gas in the near future?
Again, you need to answer the question, Malaysia as a country, what will be our potential for renewables? We do have vast hydro potential, but it's mainly in Sarawak. But over on this side of Malaysia, you can rely on solar and wind. unfortunately, Malaysia is too near the equator that our source of wind is not that abundant. So we have none, actually. But we have to rely on solar. There's only so much we can do solar because our land mass is not that big. So there must be a realization that as much as you want to push on renewables, there is still a dependency on some fossil fuel. And when you depend on some fossil fuel, gas is probably the cleanest of all the fossil fuels.
So just one final question, looking ahead for Petronas in the medium term. So gas will definitely still be the biggest bulk of your energy production, energy mix moving forward.
It is. As a company, gas will still remain the main bulk of our portfolio.
All right, yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Dato, for your time, spending some time with us to talk about the energy transition as well, what you are doing at Petronas. Well, thank you so much for your, and we hope to have you back here in Astro One.
Thank you, Cynthia. It's a pleasure. Thank you.